You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. A recent New York Times story bore a striking headline, "Holocaust is fading from memory, survey finds." That survey tells us that many people don't have a good or even a basic understanding of just how 6 million Jews were murdered in the Holocaust. And the lack of knowledge is especially pronounced in people between the ages of 18 and 34, millennials. With us now is the CEO of the Holocaust Memorial Center in Farmington Hills. It is Michigan's only Holocaust museum and education space. It's a pleasure to welcome Rabbi Eli Meyerfeld to the program. Good to have you here, Rabbi.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
What'd you feel when that survey came out on Holocaust Remembrance Day?
So part of what I felt was lack of surprise, because we do know that even the people who come to the museum tend not to have much background information. And we have large groups often who'll come. So it'll be a civic group or a church group or a school group. And so we'll talk to them before the booking and we'll say to them, now, what do the kids know? And they'll say, well, they got some background information. They know a little bit. And then when you start to take them through, you realize they really have no real background. So we're not surprised about it. In Michigan, Governor Snyder signed a bill 2 years ago, actually in our building, requiring genocide education, including the Holocaust and the Armenian Genocide, during 8th grade through 12th grade. And that's an opportunity, because you're talking now about the 18 to 20 whatevers what don't know. Well, okay, we want to figure out how to get to those, but how about the next generation as it's coming up? How do we make sure that they learn before? And it's not just the facts.
Well, no, but the facts, when I look at this survey, and I see that 31% of all Americans surveyed and 41% of millennials believe 2 million or fewer Jews died in the Holocaust. We know the number is around 6 million. And this one, 41% of all Americans and 66% of millennials don't know what Auschwitz was.
Yeah.
I'm a baby boomer. To me, that's jaw-dropping.
So what we hope people will come away with when they learn about the Holocaust is to be able to understand individual facts, not just broad stroked information, but to understand real information, and often through individual stories. Because when you hear the testimony of a survivor, you get a different kind of understanding. So yes, they have to understand the broad picture, but the way they should understand the broad picture is through the individual pieces of the puzzle that are fact-based. It also teaches them to recognize what facts are, that primary sources. That's something that, you know, you're a news station here. We talk on the radio all the time about how people have to be able to decipher what they're hearing and understand the facts that go into it. A big part of that is to look at the primary sources, understand what the basis is for the information that they're getting. And they can do that by citing the Holocaust. I heard an awful way of describing it. The U.S. Holocaust Museum says the Holocaust is the best documented crime in human history. So that gives an opportunity for people to truly study and understand information.
Goodness knows, you're right. Between survivors' histories, oral histories, between photos, video, you're right about the best documented. A piece in Slate cited research from historian Peter Shulman pointing out Americans in the 80s and 90s also demonstrated deficiencies in their ability to rattle off dates and names. There were similar blank spots then. So what do you think about that point?
So again, I mean, I talked also to social studies teachers, because now we're working with the social studies teachers around the state. And social studies teachers are recognizing that teaching names and dates will lead to forgetting. You have to teach the kids how to connect the dots, mm-hmm. how to make a fill in from one piece of information to the other and understand how they're connected.
Cause and effect.
Cause and effect.
Cause and effect.
And so it's disturbing that people can't recall these pieces of information, but if they have context to be able to recall them, it should help. Someone said to me recently, there are about 11 million people in Michigan. I'm like, okay. He said, oh, there's about 6 million people murdered in the Holocaust. So if we asked people in Michigan, each one, to remember one person lost, not everybody's going to participate, but maybe you have enough people to remember the Holocaust. Imagine half the people in Michigan, over the course of 5 years, all of them gone. So that's a context that gives you some understanding of how big a number it is. It's hard.
It is hard. Earlier this year, the Anti-Defamation League released its annual audit of anti-Semitic incidents and recorded just under 2,000 of those incidents in 2017. The year before, it was just under 1,300. So that's a 57% jump. What changed in your view?
We're getting further and further away from people who felt they had a direct connection to what happened during World War II. Mm-hmm. And it makes it much easier for people to sort of start borrowing those biases back for their own purposes. We have to fight that. For us at the Holocaust Memorial Center, it's a particular part of the battle. What we're trying to do is teach kids how to apply the facts of history to what goes on in the current world. But we're part of a wider conversation. So it's talking to the CEO at the Charles Wright Museum here, and there's a necessity to teach each one of these pieces to the puzzle for young people so they can understand and put these pieces back together again. It's not going to be just a simple one-off, but when you see a statistical spike like this, then it teaches you that we're not doing enough, and that's what we're hoping to do more of.
You mentioned survivor testimonials, and I know that the mission of the Holocaust Memorial Center is to make sure we don't forget, and visitors there get a chance often to meet and hear firsthand accounts from survivors. You've archived many recordings of survivors telling their stories, but the years are marching on and these survivors are leaving us. So what then? What are you planning for the future to make sure that that work of Never Forget doesn't recede?
So first of all, on the topic of survivors, so there is still a group of survivors who are capable of speaking, and pretty much every day between 12:15 and 1:15, we have a speaker that people can come in. At 1:15, they can get a public tour. So if you want to call before you go, you can have a chance to make sure that there'll be a speaker there. But pretty much every day, there's closed on Saturdays, but Sunday through Friday, there's a public speaker who's a Holocaust survivor. Those speakers are survivors in every sense of the word. These are people who are vigorous in their 90s now. And I brought in some snacks, and one of the survivors was in the office, and I started to ask him, do you have any allergies? And I'm thinking, no, if he had allergies, he wouldn't be here. These are people who are really robust. And I was talking earlier about one of my coworkers who's 96 years old, Guy Stern, who's a Holocaust survivor. His family sent him away from Germany. The rest of his family perished. And he's still very, very active in writing. He's finishing his autobiography now. They're still very active. That said, in a few years, we're going to have a challenge. And that's a philosophical question. What is it that survivors bring to the table? And it seems that from the research that's been done, what they really bring is they create a sense of empathy with the listener. It's not just the facts. It's the creation of a connection. And replacing that merely with a taped interview or even what they're doing now in Chicago at the museum in Illinois, they've created these holographic interviews where you can ask them questions and they can answer you. It still isn't the effect of having a face-to-face conversation with someone, or as often happens at the end of a Holocaust survivor speaking, kids go up, take a selfie, get a hug. Mm-hmm. So that connection, you can't replace it. But what you can do is you can identify what it brings to the table. And that sense of empathy is what we're working on creating systems to be able to continue to provide. Not just that they can tell their story after they're gone, which, like you say, we have the testimonies, et cetera, but also to be able to create that sense of empathy.
Rabbi Eli Meyerfeld is the CEO of the Holocaust Memorial Center in Farmington Hills. Thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad to be here, and thank you for having me.